now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
I'm Tony Evans, I'm the football editor of The Times, and I'm sitting in this week for Gab Marcotti, simply because no one else was available. I've got Stuart Robson and James Scowcroft. I'm going to talk about all the issues in football this week, and let's face it, it's been a great Premier League weekend, and we're looking forward to a fantastic Champions League couple of nights. We're going to start off by talking about Liverpool QPR.
Headed away, and an opportunity now for Liverpool on the counter-attack. Will break quickly with Coutinho. It's a good ball for Sterling. Raheem Sterling! In off Colcat, and it's 3-2. Liverpool winning with almost the last kick of the game. Delight for Brendan Rodgers. He'll be honest enough to admit that QPR don't deserve to lose this.
Liverpool were pretty poor yet again.
They were. As Brendan Rodgers said, they didn't play at high enough tempo. Their passing wasn't quite good enough. They've got a centre forward that doesn't want to run in behind, that doesn't want to hold up the play, is not working hard enough. They've got a defence at the moment that looks disjointed. They're not quite sure whether to squeeze up, whether to drop off. They're not making decisive decisions. So at times they were outplayed by a QPR side that played well, and they had two up front, and the two centre-halves didn't deal with that for quite some while.
James, I've got to ask you, that ball drops to you. You're Balotelli. You've scored. You're celebrating. You're taking your shirt off, you're getting booked, aren't you?
Possibly. I think he probably celebrated before it actually went in, really. It's just lack of concentration, isn't it? I think a player who's on top of his game, your timing, everything is just immaculate. And obviously, he's a million miles off his best so far, Balotelli.
Stuart, do you think the problem with him is he's in the wrong team? I mean, Liverpool are a team designed to break quick, move the ball fast. And Balotelli's great strength, appears to me, is to hold the ball up, wait till he feels that defender on his, on his back, and then turn him and lash a shot.
I've watched Balotelli now for 3 years. I watched nearly every game he played in Italy. I've watched every game he played for the Italian national team, and I've seen two or three of his games for Liverpool. I'm not sure what all the fuss is about. People say he's a talented player, and he's got problems off the field, and sometimes it's his attitude. I'm not sure he's got those talents that everybody keeps telling me about. I've seen him score some good goals for Milan, but week in, week out, he was one of their worst players. He lost control of the ball. He didn't make the right sort of runs. That's been going on for 3 or 4 years now. At what point is he going to change? I can't see him changing. I think this is what Balotelli is, a very average player that's got problems on and off the field.
James, do you agree?
Listen, there's a lot of hype about him, and I think some of the hype is unjustified. I haven't seen enough of Balotelli like Stuart. I think he was in a very, very good Man City side, which, probably I could even still score goals in their side of a couple of years ago there. I thought he was excellent against England in the World Cup in the summer. And when Liverpool signed, I thought, yeah, I can see why. But, at the moment, he's a million miles off the place.
And if you remember, and I was commentating on the game, the last game of the group stages, Uruguay versus Italy. The only way Italy were going to lose that game or not qualify is if somebody got sent off. And Prandelli had to take him off at half time because he was going to get himself sent off. He was being wound up by Godin, the centre half, and at some point he was going to get sent off. When you have to take a player off because he's going to be sent off in the biggest game in Italy's recent history, that's a real worry for any manager taking him on.
I still think he'll come good. I still think he'll be better than what he's showing at the moment. And I think maybe they need a Sturridge back very, very quickly just to take the pressure off him a little bit, just so there isn't that spotlight on him to score goals. But it's a big week for Liverpool.
Would he get in the team if Sturridge comes back in, or would Sturridge be up front by himself and Sterling one side of him, Lallana maybe, and Coutinho behind, and then Balotelli's out the picture,
unless he goes back to his diamond system and plays a two up? Yeah, you don't know, but I think Liverpool going away from Balotelli needs Sturridge back.
Moving forward to the Real Madrid game, Stuart, what do you think of the Liverpool defence? I mean, clearly, they're insecure on crosses, the full-backs overcommit, and they lead too many goals Brendan Rodgers, it seems to be a theme of almost his managerial career, is he doesn't, it's not his strongest area, let's say, setting up defences. I mean, what would you do with that defence?
At the moment, he's got players at fullback, and his philosophy is that he wants his fullbacks to get forward and get crosses into the box. You know, Johnson played against QPR, Enrique. They're both better attacking fullbacks than they are defensive. So that leaves a lot of pressure on the centre half. There's a lot of space down the side of them. Now, there's one way you can compensate that is you have a couple of really good holding midfield players. I'm not sure at the moment Liverpool got good holding midfield players. Steven Gerrard's a wonderful passer, we know that. But defensively, and I saw him recently against West Ham where he was ran down the sides, Downing ran off of him when he was playing in the hole behind the main strikers. And I don't think you want Henderson playing as another holding midfield player. So that's another area of problem. It's not just the centre-halves, it's not just the full-backs, it's the two holding midfield players as well. I think that's a massive problem for Liverpool if they want their full-backs to go forward. If you want to just keep a flat back four and you want to make sure your full-backs stay in a good defence position and you get an understanding, then you can have more expansive midfield players.
What about QPR? Are they going down?
I think he has to make a mind up how he wants to play, Harry Redknapp. You know, at the beginning of the season, he wanted to play with three at the back, and that was his vision. He brought in Isla to play on one side. Traore already had as a left wing back the other side. He bought three midfield players that could play in that system. He's got lots of centre-halves that can play in that system. But because it didn't work the first couple of weeks, he then, I think the players probably said, well, he can't play this system, which the players always do when things aren't going well. And instead of sticking with that and making sure that he played with the two up front that he wanted to play, and I still think Vargas, I know Zamora played well yesterday, but if Vargas played up front with Austin, there'd be a real handful. I think he should have stayed with his back three, worked at it constantly on the training field with Glenn Hoddle, with Joe Jordan, whoever's the coaching team is there, and made sure it worked. But he's swapped and changed, and he's now had Leroy Fer out on the left-hand side, which is in his position. He's good getting in the box, as he showed later on in the game. So I think he's got problems about how he wants to play. If he settles on a system and concentrates on that, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, James, I mean, you looked at them yesterday. They matched Liverpool in so many areas, and clearly they're very sharp in front of goal. They scored four. nice if they didn't score them in their own goal. But, I mean, you looked at them, and it looks to me as if they've got enough talent, but they're a little bit directionless. And I saw the previous week those figures that they'd run as a team on average over a kilometre less than the team that ran the most in the division. And does that show the sign of a side that's not working for the manager?
No, I think it shows a sign of a side, and I think Stuart makes a good point, really, that's not quite organised. I don't think they really know their roles so far, and I think, you know, Harry Redknapp's biggest problem, he doesn't know his best side. And I think as a manager, you know, we're getting into the season now, there's eight games gone, there's only 38 games in a Premier League season now, and if you're so far coming into October, nearly November, and you don't know your best side, I think that spells trouble, and I think it's going to be a long season for QPR.
Stuart, has that characterised Harry's career a little bit? You get the feeling that often when he put his team out on the pitch, after 20 minutes they'd be playing a completely different shape. There was a sense of the players had to work it out for themselves, and they're clearly not working it out at QPR.
No, I would disagree in some ways, because when Harry Redknapp's had success, it's been when he's stuck with a system, and that's what I'm saying. He needs to go back to a system. Remember when West Ham played with three at the back and five in midfield, and Di Canio was playing off the front player? You knew exactly how they were going to play. They played it right from the top, right through the youth sides, right down into the academy. And they were outstanding at that particular time. They didn't always win the games because they didn't have the best players, but they put in good performance. When Tottenham were playing well, you almost knew what side he was going to put out, and they stayed with the same shape. So they got some sort of consistency. Then when you've got that consistency, every so often, like Liverpool did last year, you tinker slightly with it when the opposition seem to know what you're doing. But at the moment, he goes from one team to the next formation from week to week, depending how they played the previous week. And I think that's the wrong way to go about it.
James, do you see Harry lasting the season? Do you see him lasting till Christmas? There's lots of rumours swirling. Our own Gary Jacob has written that he's on the way out, and Tony Pulis is in the frame to replace him. What do you think?
Well, I totally agree with that, really. I think if you look at it and look where QPR now, I think Harry's somebody that if he reads it and thinks, oh, this isn't going to go my way, I think he'll walk at his stage in his career. And I think Tony Pulis would be the perfect man to come in, and he'll know, he'll organise them at the back, he'll make them very, very solid in midfield, hard to beat, and he will know his best team. So that would not surprise me one little bit.
Has Harry Redknapp got an ally, though? Who does Tony Fernandez listen to? He's now brought Les Ferdinand onto the sort of advisory capacity. Well, who's taken Les Ferdinand around? It's been Harry Redknapp, who's given him a job in many places. So is he backing Harry Redknapp in the board?
Well, apparently there's a boardroom split, and some of the boards would like Tim Sherwood to replace Harry, and others like Tony Pulis. Do you think Tim Sherwood would be a good fit there?
Well, he's obviously, Les Ferdinand might be pushing for that, because Les Ferdinand was obviously the assistant manager under Tim Sherwood. I'm not sure I saw enough of what Tim Sherwood was about at Spurs. I mean, he spoke quite aggressively in the press, but that's not what's going to make you a good manager or not. He was another one who changed the system. They played a ridiculously high offside line. That must have been coming from him, which Tottenham got caught out on many, many occasions. So I didn't see enough of him to say that he's the man to save QPR from relegation.
Fabregas again, touch back from Oscar, chance for Fabregas! Oh, that is a wonderful goal for Chelsea. Superb interplay, cutting Crystal Palace apart. And Fabregas scores his first Premier League goal for nearly 4 years, since a goal against Chelsea for Arsenal in December 2010.
Let's talk about the other end of the table. Let's talk about Chelsea. There's been people saying in the last couple of weeks, making outrageous comments like they could be the new Invincibles. James.
I can't see that. You know, I tipped them to win the league before the start of the season. I still think they will do. I think there's only Man City that really can, you know, drag them back now. Invincibles, I just think that the Premier League is so strong. I think it'll be very, very hard, especially with the European competition as well, to go unbeaten. I'm sure your Liverpool will score a few goals past them once Mr. Balotelli gets going.
Well, hopefully with a bit of luck.
I don't know. The Invincibles, listen, it's October. If you get to March and you're unbeaten, maybe, but it's too early to call
Couldn't
that.
Couldn't agree more.
But they are the side that have got the balance right. You know, when you watch them, I saw them last season when they weren't playing quite so well. Some of their defensive displays were brilliant, you know, and I'm not talking about the back four. I'm talking about Willian, Oscar, Schürrle, people like that do the ugly side of the game so well. And you wouldn't have believed when Oscar came to Chelsea that he'd be able to run around and get his foot in. That's what Mourinho brings to a team. He makes sure that when they haven't got the ball, they also stay alive and they defend with everything and they counter-attack at pace.
Well, that's a really good point, Stuart. You know, and I think, for me, I looked at the team, a Mourinho team, that thought Oscar won't work, Fabregas won't work. And they're working beautifully, aren't they, James?
They are indeed. You know, if you look at the Fabregas' goal, it's absolutely stunning. You know, one touch football and a great finish. I just think, you know, we talk back to being organised and knowing your best team. Mourinho's got that. I think he planned this season, last season, really. You know, he's looked so far ahead and worked it out. Two sides of football. One's when you've got the ball, one's when you haven't got the ball. It's as simple as that. And, you know, if you look at Liverpool last year, excellent when they had the ball. But when they didn't, it probably cost them a little bit. Chelsea have got that balance absolutely right. You know, they can score, they can create, but they're also very, very difficult to break down.
We talk about Fabregas. Now, the best thing that could happen to Fabregas is that he's gone to Chelsea and Mourinho, because Mourinho will make sure that he does the defensive side of the game. He'll give him that responsibility and tell him exactly what he's got to do defensively as one of the two central midfield players. At Arsenal, he was allowed to flit in and out the game and run forward and not recover enough. At Barcelona, he sort of played as a number 10, a false number 9, so he didn't do the other side of the game. Now he's going to be the complete midfield player, because Barcelona, they couldn't find a position for him. For Spain, they couldn't really find a position for him. They can't ever say now that he can't defend as a normal midfield player.
Well, you know, talking about dominant players, and he's out now, but Diego Costa, James, what do you make of him as a striker? What do you think?
Oh, he's been superb, hasn't he? If you look at his all-round game, he's got every club in the bag. He can come short, he can hold it up, he can run in behind. And he's got a hunger to score goals, and I think he's brave as well. I think he gets in where it hurts. You know, there's a couple of times where he's just nicked in before the goalkeeper, where maybe a couple of the breaks would have come on and this, that and the other. Listen, it's a long season, you know. I'm sure he'll have a little spell where he goes a few games without scoring goals, but, you know, he looks a real deal. I think, you know, going back there to replace Frank Lampard, which would have been a big blow. I think Fabregas has come in and, you know, done that job as well, and, you know, they've picked the centre forward that they've needed.
And Stuart, Crystal Palace, think they put up a good fight?
They did put up a good fight. They've got some talented players. Bolasie out on the left-hand side, punching on the right-hand side, you know, Campbell up front. But I also think of Neil Warnock. when is he going to start looking at the game as a whole rather than just referees? You know, he's going to give the players excuse after excuse after excuse, blaming referees. At some point, I want to hear him talk about the football game. Or does he not know that side of the game? Does he not know the tactical side of the game? Does he not know why his side have lost games, other than it's the referee's fault?
Well, interesting, there was talk of him last week. He was saying he doesn't want to move upstairs. He doesn't want to move into a director of football role. And do you think there's a sense about him, James, that he knows his time's come and gone? And
I think he'll relish, you know, managing in the Premier League. I think he's got a great opportunity where he looked like his managerial career was over, and all of a sudden he's back in the Premier League where everybody wants to be, really. And I'm sure he'll make the most of it. It was only last week, I think, he was nominated for Manager of the Month. Mm. So, listen, losing at home to Chelsea is no big deal as well. But, you know, I've played under Neil Warnock. I know him quite well. And, you know, yeah, he does act up on the touchline and he kicks every ball, but he'll make sure in training that every player knows what he wants from
him. Did you ever have an altercation with him? Come on.
That's a good question. That is one or two, but I just put my head down really and just tried to
wise thing to do probably.
Yeah, his man management skills are very, very good. I'll say that he knew when to give someone a kick up the backside and knew when to put his arm around him.
How do you think Neil would have reacted if he would have been in charge of Sunderland's? He got beat 8-0 at the weekend by Southampton.
He would have probably had people up against the wall, I'd have thought afterwards.
Slid down the line here. This is Tadic and Mane. 8-0. At times, these two teams appear to be from different divisions. Next season, they could well be.
Stuart, given the side you played for, I'm sure you were never on the tail end of a chasing like that.
No, I think I got beaten 5 a couple of times when I was playing for Arsenal. We got beaten 5-0 at Tottenham the week before the Cup semi-final. And when I was at West Ham, we were 4-0 down at half-time to Everton when they were the champions. But I looked at that Sunderland side. They looked devoid of organisation. They looked devoid of effort at times. And there's no question about it. Some of their players gave up in the second half. They really did. They showed no effort to recover. They made poor decisions about where they should be defending. Sometimes, and there was one where John O'Shea, for one of the goals, he actually grabbed the centre forward and took him out the way, as if to say, I don't want to be involved in this guy. If I get further out the pitcher, no one's going to blame me. It was unbelievable what I was seeing.
James, are you surprised that Poirier is still there? Because there was a point just about 10 games from the end of last season when it all looked to have fallen apart up there at the Stadium of Light. And then, remarkable, they managed to stay up. But it didn't bode well for this season, did it? The meltdown in the spring.
No, but, you know, he did pull off the great escape, didn't he, last season when he looked absolutely dead and buried. But I think Saturday's defeat, that is an awful defeat. Mm. That takes a lot of coming back from. The mentality to turn that around on the training ground today, you know, they'll be showing that game for years now, 8-0. I think it was the Ipswich Man United game, which was 9-0, which is a record. So, you know, it shows you how rare a defeat that is. You know, I quite like Poirier. I think he's a good manager. I think he gets his teams playing. I think he gets, you know, if you look at the way he turned Connor Wickham around last season, I quite like the way he did that. But I think now he's almost gone back to square one again, and he's got to do it all over again. And
did he in his press conference at any stage look at himself?
Well,
I don't think he did. You know, and if you're a manager, you've got to look at the way you've set the players up. You've also, he wasn't at fault, of course, for lots of things that happened, but he was at fault for some of it. He's the person in charge of the tactics they were going to use. There was no pressure on the ball in midfield. I mean, every time the ball was switched, there was a 2v1 on the outside against the fullbacks. So he has to, at some point, take some responsibility and look at himself. But all he's doing at the moment, in the press interviews, is looking at the players and saying that some of these players, they're going to have to go into a room and watch a video, and they're going to have to watch it over and over again, and I won't be there, I think it was one of the things he said. You know, that's a real worry.
But the thing is, like you say, there were 3-0 down at half time. So you'd come in at half time and think, right, we've got to stop this, we've got to organise this, and then to lose another 5 goals in the second half, what on earth happened at half time?
How does it feel? So, I mean, yeah, so I said, most of us will never be in a dressing room at the high levels that you've played at. You know, how does it feel when you're in that sort of 3-0 down and you've got to get a grip on it? Is there recriminations? Is there anger? Is there, you know, sort of, is there a great sense of all pulling together? Or does it depend on the people you've got around you?
Well, it's a bit of everything, really. I think you go in and you fear at first. You fear, Christ, what's the manager going to say? You're worried about the reaction of the crowd, even if you're away or at home, and you're just thinking, right, we need to damage limitation here. You know, we need to stop the rot, let's get out of here, let's get through the game and we'll go back and talk about it in the week. But, you know, that's what I'm just saying. Coming at 3-0 down, you think, right, whatever happens, we're rolling the sleeves up here and having a go. And, you know, even if we lose 3-0, at least the second half it's 0-0 and we've sort of stopped the rot. But to go out and concede another 5 goals the way they did.
The worst example was Katimol, when he, just after they'd conceded, I don't know, the seventh, the ball gets played into him, he loses it, he looks across at the bench, stops running, and they go and score again. And he looks as though, you know, if Katimol is always being held up as an example that he's somebody that will always give his 100%, he'll be too overcommitted at times, he'll commit too many fouls. But he didn't even do that. I mean, there was another goal that when the ball was switched out and found himself in the right back position. He didn't close the ball down. He stood 5 yards off, let the player cross the ball. And that's one of your leading players was behaving like, there's something wrong at Sunderland if that's going to take place.
Yeah. Well, we have to give Southampton some credit.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you know, I was one of those who thought they'd really struggle this year. I thought they got rid of the best players. Actually, they kept the best player, Morgan Schneiderlin. Mm-hmm. And they've also got a very, very good side. Where would they finish, James?
I think they'll finish just above mid-table, really. I think if you look at them, you know, confidence is high. I think they've got a manager that comes in. If you listen to him, you know, he talks really, really well, Ronald Koeman. And he's been successful in Holland as well before he'd come to Southampton. So, you know, I don't think it was... We all looked at Southampton in the summer and thought, what are they doing? You know, this is just... committing suicide here. But I think there was a little bit of a method to it as well. If you look at the players that they got, you know, maybe you know, they saw Liverpool coming on one or two signings as well.
That's for sure.
And he's kept the hunger of the side as well, because I think that's what he would probably be worried, and that's what the Southampton board would worry about. Suddenly their best players were being linked with everybody, and even Schneiderlin has been linked with everybody. Do the players then lose their focus? Do they lose their hunger? Do they lose their appetite to play for your club? And I think that's why they sold them at a good price, and the players they've brought in are playing with that hunger. And that was as good a performance as you'll see in terms of winning the ball back and the creativity when they had it.
Arsenal, they've been spotty, to say the least. But it strikes me that one of the positive things is they've got a goal scorer in Danny Welbeck.
Yep.
And that's going to turn out really well. But why are they so inconsistent, and why are they so incoherent at times?
There's a good reason for that, is that they don't do enough tactical work on the training field. All their training is about playing small-sided games, playing at high intensity. They talk about the creative side of the game. They don't work defensively. So when things aren't going right on the ball, and when they are being counter-attacked, they don't know about decision-making. There was a great example for the second goal, where Monreal, I know he's out of position at centre-half, and Wilshere, I'm not quite sure whether to go with the run of the midfield player. So Monreal stays in the middle, Wilshere can never catch him up, so the cross comes in, and then Mertesacker's beaten in the air by the centre-forward, Hernandez. So those little things will always take place unless you do a lot of good defensive work, and you have some drills, and you have some understanding of what you're looking for. Arsenal are very good creative. They've got two excellent players. Sanchez can run with the ball, he can twist and turn, he's got dynamism. And Danny Welbeck's a good signing, because he can run in behind people, he's got good strength, he's much quicker than people gave him credit for, and he's now shown that he can be a good finisher as well. But if you don't do the other side of the game, and the things we talked about, Mourinho getting right, the balance right, Arsenal will always just be below those top sides.
James, you mentioned...
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Morgan Schneiderlin earlier on, should Arsenal have put the money on the table and paid for him and got him, would he have made a huge difference to them? Because they struggle in the holding role in the midfield.
Well, they're crying out for a player, aren't they? You know, it beggars belief, really, that everybody can see it bar Arsene Wenger. So, and I just think, one, you know, it's going to be a season where Arsenal are going to catch a cold. Even if they're, I know they scraped into fourth this season, but if you look at the Besiktas game, was it at home?
When they qualified, they were lucky.
And I just think it just takes one season just to drop out of there. You can see Manchester United, they've dropped out of it, and now hard it is for them to get back, and the money they've spent, and it's still not going to guarantee them to get into fourth. And I just think if Arsene Wenger doesn't get that right in the next 6 to 9 months, I think Arsenal
might
struggle.
But it's not just about buying players, it's about doing work on the training field. You know, Arsene Wenger could go and buy the best four defenders in the world. If they haven't got any sort of understanding of what they're trying to do, whether they're trying to drop off, whether they're trying to squeeze up, who covers who, they're always going to have a problem.
I have a nervous breakdown watching Arsenal all the time. It really frustrates me. Both full backs bomb forwards and leave the centre halves on an island.
And then in some games, you've got Arteta as the holding midfield player who, I'm not sure, James could probably run a little bit quicker than him now. You know, he just can't move Arteta. So as a holding midfield player, you need people that can get out and defend in wide areas if they have to get out and cover the fullbacks, or if the centre half goes out there, they have to be good enough in the centre half position so when the ball comes in the box they can head it away or deal with the centre forward. Arteta can't do any of those, and Flamini likewise is no longer athletic enough.
What about Hull? I mean, the cup final Saturday, what have they got to do to beat Arsenal? You know, I sense, certainly in the cup final and also on sort of at the Emirates, a certain lack of conviction towards the end, where you think if they would have pushed on and carried on doing what they'd done, they would have beat Arsenal. Do you think it's one of those things which small clubs struggle with?
How are we talking about Arsenal being poor defensively? It's a difficult place to go, the Emirates, because the pitch is massive. And everyone sort of says, the crowd aren't particularly noisy. What they do, Arsenal, they get onto the referee about time wasting. They get onto the referee about every tackle. Arsene Wenger doesn't do too much coaching from the side, but he's on at the fourth official. Yep. And they get lots and lots of decisions. So the ball keeps being played into the opponent's box. They can't get out. And that's what happened at the Emirates. And Hull, in the end, didn't defend quite well enough. They defended well for most of the game, but Hull didn't play as well as I've seen them play on other occasions when they've come to the Emirates. They beat Arsenal 2-1 when Phil Brown was the manager. Yeah, they've also played very well in that first half in the FA Cup where they actually dominated the game. Arsenal dominated the game in terms of the possession. They just didn't create enough opportunities and didn't take their opportunities.
Well, let's talk about the other North London side, who obviously were at the Etihad to play Manchester City in a game that appeared to be sponsored by Chris Waddle. Penalties all over the place. You know, people not scoring them. City are a good side, aren't they? They should be doing better. It strikes me that they switch off in periods of the game and let people back in before they've killed it off. Is this a reasonable perception of them, or am I getting the wrong end of the stick?
No, I think it's a very good analysis of them. I think they're on their day, they're as good as anyone. But like I said, I think you've hit the nail on the head. They do seem to turn off, and even against Tottenham, you know, they thumped Tottenham in the end. But if you look at the chances Tottenham had, I know they missed a penalty, and possibly, you know, the game could have turned around and been on its head. You know, a team who would have been defensively better than, you know, we talk about defending all morning here, could have gone to Man City and got a point. And teams have done that this season. Just think, Man City just have a little bit of a soft underbelly that Chelsea don't. And I think that's why Chelsea will pip them.
What about Everton? For the first time this season, they clicked. You've got Ross Barkley, who obviously everyone is talking up. He was playing that number 10 position on Saturday, and he was excellent. Roberto Martinez seemed to have lost his way a little bit, James, in the early part of the season. The derby at Anfield, he's got Lukaku, and he's got two centre-halves who are terrified of the ball dropping out the air, and he pushes him out wide on the wing. I think sometimes he's a little bit clever for his own goods, and do you think going back to basics is the best thing for Everton?
I think so, yeah. I think, if you look at Everton and you look at Martinez, even if he's in his Wigan days, they played some lovely, lovely football, but they conceded too many goals. And Wigan got relegated, and that's the reason why, because they were, you know, we talk about it again, so expansive and just not closing the ball down well enough, getting organised, getting players back. I do think they've been a little bit, I thought they were unlucky at Old Trafford. I thought they should have got a point there.
Yeah, very much so.
they've got good players. You know, Ross Barkley is a great player. Lukaku is a real handful. If again they can organise that midfield, because I actually do think they've got a back four that can defend and be harder to break down, harder to beat. I think Everton can push on, you know, but you've got to be careful in the Premier League, because if you lose ground, it's very, very hard to make it up.
You were at Burnley, weren't you, James? Turf Moor.
Yep.
What were they like? I mean, it looks like one of those horrible years.
Yeah, it is going to be a long season, and, you know, at this moment in time, you can't see them staying up. What I would say is they played exceptionally well, especially first half, and they should have been a goal, two goals up. You've got to take your chances at the top level, and they just don't seem to be able to score goals, Burnley. That's their problem, and, you know, you're always going to be open to concede. There are two or three chances in the first half where they need to take their chances, and if they could have got in front, maybe a goal, got two goals, it would have been a different story. But effort, energy level, the crowd were behind them. It's a typical team that had been promoted. Everybody was pulling in the same direction. To be fair to Sean Dyche, I don't think he could have got any more out of his players, but I just think West Ham had that quality that you need in
the one thing league. That stood out in the game was the crossing ability, or the crosses, the quality of crosses that came in from both sides. You know, it's still a vital part of football, getting good crosses into the box, getting players running into the box and getting good headers in. It was outstanding in that game.
But there's one lad, a left back for West Ham I've seen quite a bit over the last two or three seasons, because he came from Ipswich, Cresswell. He's actually a scouser. I think he's a big Liverpool fan, but he had an excellent game at the weekend, put a great ball in for Sacco for the first goal, and he could be one that, if he carries on, could be one to keep an eye out.
Well, you know, Allardyce seems to have turned around at West Ham. You know, they were talking about before the season, they were demanding better football, he was on his way out. I've never had a problem with Sam Allardyce's football. He always plays to a plan. It's not just hit and hoof. And, you know, I was over at Upton Park when they beat Liverpool, and they've got a lot of pace. They get the ball wide and they swing the ball in. Valencia looks like a good player. They look like a side who could finish easily in the top 10.
Well, he's already said, hasn't he, that he thinks they should have more points than what they have. You know, they're up to fourth at the moment. I think the big problem is when Andy Carroll comes back, what's Sam going to do then? Is he going to put Carroll back in? Is he going to keep it as it is? You know, he's got some big decisions to make. All of a sudden, you know, Valencia and Saka have turned that team around.
I've got nothing wrong with direct football, but he didn't play direct football very well last year, because when you play direct football, you've got to have people in the areas where you're going to be playing into. And last year, they had Andy Carroll up front by himself. The wide players were often back in defensive positions. So when they were playing the ball up to Andy Carroll, they couldn't get any support, so they'd give the ball away cheaply. Now they're often playing with two up front, and Valencia sort of comes in off one of the wings. But they're playing with more. So when the ball does get played forward and they do get hold of it, now when they start to pass it, they're passing it in the top third of the field, and they're getting the ball wide and getting crosses in. So they're getting players in the right areas to cause problems. It's more like the direct gate style of football that Graham Taylor would play many years ago, which was effective. And it was getting the ball forward early, getting it into wide areas, getting quality crosses in, and getting players running into the box. They're doing it well at the moment, West Ham.
Well, I've left this game to last because, I mean, part of me just thinks, oh no, not again. Stoke Swansea. You've got the Victor Moses incident, the penalty, Gary Monk going off on one, you know, saying that obviously the penalty was, it was a dive, it was, you know. But the question I ask, we have this conversation, probably once a month about diving. What can you do about it? The referee made a mistake. I mean, what can you really do about it, James?
Well, there's not a lot you can do, really, unless you're going to use video evidence on a Monday morning to ban people, really. That's, I think, the only answer out of it. I think we've got so, as a game now, whistle-happy. Any little touch it's a free kick, it's going to encourage that to happen. You know, back in the 70s and 80s, it didn't happen because players got away with it. Or if you went down, you wouldn't get a free kick. So all of a sudden it's massively in favour with the attacker, knowing any little touch here I can go down. And, you know, we call it diving. You know, people are doing what they can to win a game of football, really. Can you really blame them?
The game has to be more physical, you know. And you look at the goal that Diame scored for Hull. It's probably a foul. But Arsenal's players, you know, there's a touch on the shoulder, it must be a free kick, I'm going to give up on it. Mertesacker doesn't chase. Yeah. Flamini turns round to the referee. Instead of getting onto the ball, centre-halves chasing back towards their own goal. They almost wait for a little nudge in their back, go down, and the referee automatically blows for a free kick. you know, James is a coach, I've been a coach. You're the referee every day in training. You don't have a whistle in your mouth, but you're controlling the sessions. And you just let play go on. And you get a much better game because of it, rather than every player going down easily, knowing they're going to get a free kick.
Because if the referee was in the studio now, he would actually say, well, he did touch him. Yeah. You know, that would be his excuse. Mm. And he would, well, you know, this is why I gave a penalty. But, you know, until we sort of clamp down on this, that if you do touch someone, well, you know, it's not a free kick. You play on, you know, unless it's you're deliberately trying to bring somebody in down. But like I said, the game needs to get tougher.
Well, it seems to me it's a consequence of taking the physicality out of the game. I mean, and Gary Monk can complain all he likes, but even if, James, on a Monday morning, they suspend players and they're not going to take the 3 points away. And that's the problem,
isn't it? And the other problem is, you know, everyone looks at Moses because it's a penalty. What about everywhere else on the field that there's a players are going down so easily? You know, every sort of 5 minutes a player's throwing himself to the ground and getting a free kick. But because it's in a less dangerous area, no one talks about that. That's okay. But once it comes into a penalty box, then it all changes.
It's almost obscured. You know, what was a reasonable game? You know, and a good performance by Stoke.
Yeah, good performance by Stoke. And Swansea, for the first 20 minutes, half an hour, played some of the best football you'll see. Some of their combination play to get into the box was outstanding. And Stoke had to fight themselves back into the game. They played some good counter-attacking some play with Moses, a key part of that, with his running with the ball. Crouch still doing well in the air and holding up the play. So it was a good game spot by the players and the referee.
I've enjoyed Swansea this year. At times in the not-too-distant past, they weren't direct enough. They passed the ball around nicely and they keep possession. But now it's all with a purpose. They're all trying to get in. Have you been impressed with them, James?
If you look what Swansea have done, you have to admire them. What the philosophy that they've built in that football club over the last 4 or 5 years, where they come in, they play virtually the same system, they play through midfield. It is great to watch. You know, the key is that you don't pass for the sake of it. You have a little bit of a direction to your plan. I think Gary Monk's done that. I think he's identified that and think, right, when we get the ball, we're going to play with a purpose.
And I think they've got a player. He didn't succeed at Tottenham for whatever reason, but verging on greatness at times. And that's Sigurdsson. I saw him play for Iceland against the Dutch. He saw both goals, but that was only part of it. His understanding of the game, where to pass, when he did the defensive side of the game, he had to do against Holland, but he's still a clever, clever footballer.
Right, we're going to go on to a debate, which actually was kicked off by a column I wrote last week, which was written in rage after Greg Dyke came out and gave us his proposals for the future of the England game. It was full of buzzwords and jargon, lacked detail, and it's the classic, big ideas, but real no ideas. I don't see there's a coherent thought process in English football about developing the future of the game. I think there's an element of monkey see, monkey do being in it over the years. I mean, remember the Ajax way, and everyone was doing it the Ajax way, and then they built Clairefontain, and as I've seen George's Park, and then all of a sudden it was Barcelona, we've got to be like Barcelona, tiki-taka, and then old Dortmund. James, you're a youth coach. Am I wrong?
No, you're not, actually. I think if you look in the FA, I think now, we're Gareth Southgate's trying to put a lot of work into now getting an identity with the England youth teams up till 21, which I think is slowly happening. The problem that we're always playing catch up and we're always trying to copy people. Like I say, everybody, I work in the academy system, the ECCC, everybody wants to play like Barcelona. Now, all of a sudden, people have worked out how to play against Barcelona. Well, we're now moving on to the next bit. Can we be like Bayern Munich now, where we're hard to beat and this, that and the other? So, you know, the English game, it will debate it for years and years and years, won't we? It just doesn't seem to be, you know, to get it right. What there is at the moment, there's a lot of money into the game. So what we have to make sure is that money's put into the right areas.
The problem with the English game for 40 years has been the FA. The FA are in charge. They decide what the coaching plan is. They put on all the coaching plans, which the coaches have to take to get their badges. Now, I'll ask James the question. When you went to those coaching courses, were you inspired or did you just have to get your badge? Were you actually inspired by what you were being taught?
There is a, you know, there's a massive thing that people go on there because they want the qualification, because you now,
can't get a job unless you get that qualification. I actually, and to be fair, when I did one of my qualifications, there was the ex-Cambridge manager, John Beck, was on there. Go back to John Beck, the style of football he played at Cambridge, why is he on? But I actually got close to him and picked his brains on it and learned a lot through him. It wasn't through the FA manual or handbook, but it was very, very stereotyped. I'm actually on to do my A licence in the summer, so I might be able to answer the question better in 9 months' time to see how that goes.
Because I think we are now better producing better technical players. There's no question about that, because they've talked about, you know, more time on the ball, small sided game, that part of it's, but I'm looking at games now, and I'm looking at youth team, I'm looking at pundits, I'm looking at most people that I see in football. Do we understand the tactical side of the game? And I don't think we still do, because that's not being taught by the FA anymore. It's all about the technical side of the game. But the tactical side of the game, and if Gab Marcotti was here, you know, when he wrote his book with Viali, the Italians are always looking at the tactical side of the game. How can they create space? How can they create an overload here? In England, we don't do any of that. So the players, when I went from youth team coaching to first team coaching, I was shocked at how much I then had to teach the first team players about the tactical side of the game, the theory of the game, because they didn't know it. And they were, some of those were international footballers. And when we're talking about whether it be attacking side of the game or the defensive side of the game, we had to reteach the players all about the theory of how we should be playing.
Well, that's one of the things that actually annoyed me, because in the Dyke proposals, it seemed to be simply more 3G pitches and more coaches. Well, a couple of things are problems there. It depends on the coaches you're getting. One, the FA are using the coaching system. It's more expensive to get a coaching badge here than anywhere else in Europe.
But just stop you there, Tony. I'm doing my A licence in the summer. It's £5,500.
Now, you see, that's just a way of raising money. It's nothing to do with producing good coaches. And then the other thing that bothered me is, come back to what you were saying, Stuart, there seems to be no focus on how, getting people how to play. And what is one of the reasons for this is the Premier League and the way it is. It's, you know, the hairy barely of it, it's manic, it's people don't put the foot on the ball.
I think that the people in charge, and James has just mentioned Gareth Southgate there. Now, I listen to Gareth Southgate because I've been quite critical of him in the past. So I now listen to everything that he comes up with and he says. And I hear him talking about getting the continuity, going to tournaments, players have got to come. We've got to play through the thirds. I've never heard him explain how they're going to play through the thirds. And when I watch the England youth teams and the England under-21s, I realise they don't know how to play out from the back. They know how to switch play around the back, but they don't know how to create space in front. I watch a lot of Juventus, and they're the best coach team in Europe because they know exactly what their game plan is. They know how to get the ball into the front player. They know how to come out from the back because Pirlo will move out the way and they leave space to roll the balls into the front. Then they have different movement off that. We're asking our back players to play out from the back, and our midfield players come back and try and get the ball off them. So when they then play the ball forward, they're outnumbered in the forward areas and there's no space to roll balls into the front players. Now, that's not the players' fault. That's the coaching department's fault. You know, and I still don't hear anybody coming up with theories. The only person I listen to and really he understands his game is John Cartwright, who was blacklisted by the FA because he challenged them time and time again when he worked at the FA. And he's the best coach I ever worked with, best tactical coach, the best technical coach I ever worked with. But he's blackballed by the FA because he challenged them at all levels.
We talk about needing an identity. And you do need an identity. But are we looking for it the wrong way? I mean, for example, I see clubs where they say, we're going to play 4-3-3 all the way through the age groups. And you look at some of the teams they've got, and they've got players who are patently not suited to that system. Yet they're forcing them into that round hole, the square pegs. Should we take a step back, James, and should we say, what do English players do well? Let's get them doing that. Let's get them doing more of it, and let's improve the technique on top of that.
Well, I think the key to it is to do a bit of everything. I think, like Stuart says, we don't. I don't think, looking back at my own career, was I really coached tactically? I don't think so. I think it was all 4-4-2. I think we've moved on now, but it's all now 4-3-3. And everyone is playing the same. You know, Louis van Gaal comes in here, and it's right, I want to play with this, or I might change it here. And I think to myself, well, how many kids through the Manchester United Academy would have played as wing-backs or would have played as three centre? I bet none of them. So it's all foreign to them. So, you know, I know at Ajax, the Ajax method is that players play in different formations, they play in different positions, so they appreciate. Go back to what you say, sir. I see academy football every week, every weekend. Everyone's playing out from the back. They play out from the back, but no one knows what the next pass is. So it's now.
I went to watch Tottenham's Academy, maybe 4 years, nothing against Tottenham's Academy. And the coaches from the side, and one of them was a big part of the FA when they were. They kept saying, play out, pass it out the back, throw it out to the. Then the centre half was getting it. There was no movement for him. So he's getting closed down. He's giving the ball away. The opposition had scored, and they're saying, no, you've got to do that better. No, it wasn't his fault. It was what was going on around it. They didn't understand how they created space for him to find that next pass, how they could step into midfield at the right time. There was no education. When I played for England, and it's the only education I had about playing out from the back, when I played for the England youth side for 2 years, John Cartwright was the coach. And we worked at it every training session, how we were going to get. And the opposition, when you played against European teams, they played with three up front against the back four as we played. But I played as the sweeper. But it was how we were going to create space, how the midfield players ran away from us. So we now played four against three in a massive area, which we should easily have done. And we knew how to do that. But I don't see anybody doing that now.
Why is it like this? And I mean, you know, we sit there and we say this, and you can see it. You can see the lack of movement in front of the defensive players when they've got the ball at their feet. You know, why are we seeing that and the coaches aren't?
Well, I think I think everyone's seeing it, but like you say, it's identifying and it's how are we going to work it out then? You've got to coach with freedom, and I think there's so many people that this is what you've got to do and you mustn't do this. Now, you know, if all of a sudden you have a centre-half who's not comfortable at the back, well, then don't throw it out the back. Go forward, go into your centre-forward, because what I see now is I see loads of centre-forwards who can't hold the ball up because they never get the ball. But by the time it comes into them, they've had 20 passes. So, you know, I think you need to coach with freedom. I think you need to let the players express themselves. You need to let the coaches express themselves as well. And sometimes just let the kids go out and play.
Yeah. So, essentially, be pragmatic. Well, that's it for this week. If you haven't subscribed on iTunes and Player FM, do so immediately, or I'll come looking for you. Well, main thanks to my guests today, Stuart Robson, James Schoolcroft. I'll tell you what, I could talk to these fellas all day. So check out thetimes.co.uk. Members get exclusive football, rugby and cricket highlights. Just search Times Sport online. You'll have Gabriel Marcotti back next week, so you'll have a professional in the chair. But goodbye from me, Tony Evans, and goodbye from Stuart Robson and James Schoolcroft. Hope you enjoyed it.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
Hi, I'm Tim Montgomery, the presenter of another Times podcast from the opinion pages called Did You Read? It's the perfect weekly snapshot of some of the best writing in the newspaper. Find out more by heading to thetimes.co.uk/commentcentral and search Did You Read to subscribe on iTunes.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.